All right, let's get started for the lightning debate session. Zot! Woo! Okay, I want to first introduce you to our distinguished panelists. We're going to be doing a debate on three topics, okay? So first we have Philip Stark, Professor of Statistics at UC Berkeley. We have Barbara Simons, the head, the ex-president of USACM. ACM, excuse me. Ron Rivest, professor at MIT. And Brian Hancock, the director of voting system certification and testing at the EAC. I prepared several debate topics. We're going to be debating three today. And I asked each one of them, in fact, I twisted their arms. I insisted that they pick a pro or a con side, okay? So that means a couple of ground rules, expectations. First of all, nobody here speaks for their employer, and some of them may not even be speaking for themselves because I twisted their arms to say yes or no, okay? All right, so I'm going to ask for a brief opening statement from each side, one pro, one con. Then I'll ask them some questions and I'll open it up to the audience for questions. But before I do that, I'm going to talk a little bit about just some common ground that seemed to come up in our email discussions amongst ourselves before, as we were preparing for this debate. Okay, so I wanted to keep this lively with a little bit of controversy, but I also want to recognize that there's actually a lot of common ground among us. Topic number one, certification. Okay? Statement on the table. Certification should be generally more rigorous than it currently is, particularly if we can make it more efficient. Okay. So by background, I suggested as baseline, for instance, in the US, we might want to look at current certification practices, how systems are currently certified to the standards, VVSG 1.0, 1.1, the current level of testing. Do we think this needs to be more rigorous? Do we need more testing? There was actually a lot of common ground on this, so let me mention some of the common themes. First of all, I think a lot of folks supported the idea of making the testing more efficient, felt there were opportunities where there was some of the testing that really may not make sense, so we might be able to make it more efficient. Also support for making some aspects more rigorous. And one of the topics that came up, and I think we'll hear about a lot, is the distinction between pre-election certification testing and post-election audits and the trade-off between the two. So you could really think of this question as suggesting certification, pre-election certification, should be more rigorous and have higher standards. Okay. So on the yes side, Barbara Simons is going to present the opening statement. 2 minutes.
Oh dear, I didn't prepare anything. Sorry, Ron, you're gonna have to put it up. So I want to say, first of all, that when it comes to certification, I have a real problem with certification in general because, as we know, the rules right now say that, at least in some states, you have to certify a system before you can use it. And there's this catch-22 whereby if a bug is found, say, in the COTS, and the system is updated to reflect that bug, then it's no longer certified. So I know that there are ways of trying to deal with bug updates, but as we all know, a small change in software might have a change somewhere else. So I think that the whole problem of certification in the sense of guaranteeing that the system is correct and will work correctly is an impossible one. So with that caveat, I do think it's important that we do good certification to the extent that we need software independence, of course. We need strong software independence. And with that, the whole testing becomes less important, but we still don't want machines to fail when they're being used. So I do think it's important to do good certification to make the machines as robust as possible, to eliminate potential problems that may not have anything to do with software independence. And I think an interesting question, which was not asked at the panel, but I want to throw it out, is to compare certification of voting machines with certification of other products, say by the underwriter's laboratory, whereby if some product is certified as safe and it turns out that there's a life-threatening problem with it or something serious, I believe the certifiers could be held liable. Now, I'm not sure about that. I'm not an attorney, but certainly somebody can be held liable if there's a major problem with a consumer product. We don't have something like that with voting. So in some sense, certification of voting is different from anything else, and it's we don't have the level of accountability that we need. I don't know if I've given a pro position or not, David.
Thank you. All right. Philip is going to advocate for the disagree position. 2 minutes.
I'm just going to say something. I'm going to poach from a paper with our illustrious moderator here. So I think that we're paying too much attention to certification and not enough attention to how stuff is used in practice. And so I want to just put forward two related questions that I think are quite different but sound similar. The first is, in a laboratory, as the equipment is shipped from the manufacturer, is it capable of counting votes to some pre-specified level of accuracy? That's what certification addresses. Second question is, as it was actually maintained, deployed, and used in the current election, did the equipment find the right winner? And that's what post-election auditing addresses. So I think that when it comes to the accuracy of vote tabulation, what's important is that the system as a whole functions as something that's strongly software independent. So you have an audit trail you can refer to go back and retabulate the votes if there's evidence of error. You need to make sure that you keep it intact, as I just said in the previous talk. But what's important to certify, perhaps, are things around usability, things about reliability of anything that is required to capture voter intent on election day. If you can capture intent correctly, knowing that things will tabulate well in a laboratory is somehow secondary or even tertiary, provided you have a post-election audit. So I would advocate much stronger regulations around the processes, the procedures, and whatnot that are used to ensure that the audit trail is complete and curated well and remains, you know, adequately intact at the time of the audit, and then followed by some kind of an audit.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to ask a few questions of our panelists to get things started. First, let me start for Barbara, Brian, but anyone else who wants to comment. If certification should be more rigorous, what do you think should be the highest priorities for areas where we could improve certification or raise the bar?
Well, I'll take the first stab at that. I mean, I think, actually, I agree with Philip, and that I think usability is one of the things, usability and to a lesser degree accessibility, one of the things that has been gravely under-tested or not tested. Okay. Under the current process. That is improving as we move forward with the next iterations of the VBSG, as at least two of the folks on the panel here know. So that would be one. And in fact, I don't think I disagree too much with the other two at all here. I would advocate, though, a defense in depth, right? So we need both. We need a rigorous and efficient pre-election certification, as well as both rigorous and efficient post-election auditing, to get the best bang for our buck, so to speak.
Well, you know, as you said, David, it's not clear how much disagreement you're going to be getting here. I would advocate open-ended vulnerability testing, and maybe that's what you were meaning by in-depth. So certainly, if we're certifying software for voting machines, I think we should be using the kinds of standards that are standards, if you'll forgive me, for Silicon Valley and other places where software is developed, instead of, you know, what we had earlier on, which is basically a checklist.
I'm going to add something here, too. I think, as Barbara said, it's hard to get a lot of disagreement among this panel. I think the question here, in part, is what is the point of certification? What are we aiming for? What things can it do well? What things can it do well? And the landscape is changing, too, and I think we need to think about that as things evolve. For example, I'll give me two examples. One is the lease versus buy decision, right? The classic model is that you certify these equipment. They're big, bulky, expensive, whatever. You buy a bunch of them, you keep them around for 20 years and use them. And I think, you know, a lot of countries, Brazil, I think, particularly, is moving to a more frequent rollover of the equipment. We may see more of that in this country. The lifetime of electronic equipment seems to be decreasing. So maybe a lease versus buy thing would change the landscape there and make us rethink what we want out of the certification system. And there's other things that are happening. There's the increasing emphasis on post-election audits, and how do we know when we've got a good audit method? So certification of some of these larger things. How do we ask NIST to say, is this audit method well-founded or whatever? Yeah. Too? So there's other things that you might want to certify too if we're relying more on audits.
If I could just make one other quick comment. I would like to see a requirement that voting systems be easily audited. And we've heard comment when Philip talked about not being able to do ballot matching easily. There are a number of things which could be significantly improved with voting systems, and I think that should be something which is required.
Is it usability or ease of use of audits?
Yeah, ease of use of audits, right.
Can I interject one more thing, which is that the usability testing, I think, should apply to ballots as well. As Dana pointed out this morning, that, it's not just voting. I mean, a ballot is voting equipment, right? And somehow we don't treat it as voting equipment. But it's an important part for capturing voter intent, and we really should be paying much more attention to that.
Yeah, and to be clear, as far as usability, I meant the entire system, not just the box itself.
All right, so let me stir the waters some more to see if I can get any disagreement. Ron, I'm going to pick on you.
All right.
Good.
So you put yourself down on the disagree side.
Oversimplification
for sure, which I understand the position is post-election audits reduce the need for pre-election certification. And so we may not need to be more rigorous. Let's talk about open-ended vulnerability testing. Mm-hmm. You were one of the advocates of open-ended vulnerability testing on the TGDC. It's not currently performed.
Right.
Do you believe we need to perform open-ended testing? And if so, does that undermine the position that, how do you reconcile that with a position that post-election audits reduce the need for pre-certification testing? Have you changed your stance on open-ended vulnerability testing?
No, I think things have evolved, right? So, I mean, you and Philip have been strong advocates of auditing, reducing the need for certification security testing, and I think I agree with that. At the time we were talking about open-ended vulnerability testing, we were not only talking about systems with good audit trails and talking about systems where you might need to have careful auditing. But I still think a certain amount of open-ended vulnerability testing is a good idea, but I think a strong audit program reduces the need for doing a lot of that. Some of the audits, the reviews we've seen have been fairly brisk, and I think having a brisk open-ended vulnerability testing would be a good part of any certification thing, but it doesn't need to be as extensive as I think we imagined first when we were talking about that in DGDC.
Scaled back open-ended vulnerability testing, but still open-ended vulnerability testing. Okay. Brian, do you want to say anything more about efficiency? I think there's I've heard a lot about the impact of certification testing on the voting system market and opportunity for innovation and on the vendors. You have a unique perspective here. Do you want to say any more about that?
Thank you. So we've been striving for efficiencies ever since we opened the program. Barbara mentioned other sort of federal efforts or large-scale efforts to certify products. The one thing I will say is, we've been doing this for 6 or 7 or 8 years now, and a lot of those other programs have been in existence for 50, 60, 70 years, and so they have that benefit of a long history and have made improvements, which we've been doing. We've found some surprising things, and maybe some not-so-surprising things for some of the folks in the room that have sort of impeded the efficiency of the process. One of those, and we're addressing it in various ways, is the fact that the systems as submitted are generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, not ready for testing when they come in. Meaning that the manufacturer either sometimes doesn't have all the hardware submitted, they don't have everything in a row to make it efficient for them. I'm not quite sure why that is. If I was them, I'd sort of want a more efficient process, but there are a lot of ways that we can make improvements, both with our process, with our standards, our requirements, and other things.
Well, I get the impression that to some extent the vendors rely on the certification testing to do some of the testing that they should be doing. It saves them, I don't know if it saves them money or not, but.
I would say that's true, and certainly we'd suspected that. In fact, I was recently up in Cuyahoga County in the state of Ohio, in Columbus, for the certification of the system they use in Cuyahoga County. And in fact, the manufacturer up there basically admitted in a public setting that they had not done much, if at all, beta testing prior to working with us. So.
Okay, so what I'd like to do now is, if there's folks in the audience who have questions, just raise your hand and I'm going to pick two of you.
Wow.
I'm going to probably pick from people who haven't spoken as much so far today. So Vanessa and Purvi, come on up. And I'd like you to each speak your question, and then panelists wait to hear both of their questions, and then I'll let you address and comment on whichever of those.
So my question is, don't you think it's time that certification moved towards certification of properties rather than of, the old stuff, whatever it is? So does this provide integrity? What kind of auditability does it provide? Not just paper ballots, but you have cryptographic systems. You know, do they provide privacy? What type of privacy? What type of evidence do they provide at the end? Cryptographic audit trails. What type of proofs? Have the proofs been checked, referenced, etc.? So that's my question.
Okay, my question is about what happens with the certification report, especially if it includes penetration testing or security vulnerability analysis or whatever. Should these reports be public? Must they be public? Are they still useful even if everybody can ignore the answers and keep them secret? So.
Well, that last question is kind of a softball, so I'll try to take that one first. Under our program, the test reports, all versions of the test reports as well as the test plans are made public. They're available on the AC's website. Every discrepancy that the lab found during testing with that voting system is also public and in that test report. And so as much as anything, you know, it obviously shows that the lab has done the testing, we've certified the product. But what it does is allow election officials who are going to be purchasing that equipment to look at it, look at the discrepancies and say, look, you know, regardless of the certification, can I live with that system in my county? Is that the system I want to use? Well, so the open-ended vulnerability testing or penetration testing that we've talked about is something that's sort of coming in the next iteration of guidelines. There is, there is some lower levels of penetration testing that are done now, but not anything nearly like the open-ended vulnerability testing that was talked about in the original version of 2.0. But I don't disagree that I think that's needed, absolutely needed. Yep, absolutely.
Are the tests also made public?
Tests?
Yeah, the testing that's done by the labs, does that mean?
Right now, the test cases themselves on a high level are not generally made public. The labs have had some issues with proprietary nature of the products that they've developed. I'm not going to say whether I agree or disagree with that, but that's the fact.
All right, anyone else have any last words?
Well, I completely agree with what Purvi said. Are we talking about addressing the...
There's two questions here.
Yeah, two questions.
Okay, both questions. Okay, yeah, that somehow functional requirements seem like the right way to approach this, including things like strong software independence. I think that makes a lot more sense than
There was an effort that David Chum and others were trying to organize this VSPR, Voting System Performance Review thing, which maybe you're alluding to indirectly through your question, which was directed towards that, trying to put together a list of properties that needed a voting system should have, and then figuring out a process for rating systems on that, not just a pass-fail system, but saying, you know, how well are you doing on these various sort of principal directions. And I think that thinking of certification as more of a rating system than a pass-fail system may have advantages as well, although it doesn't fit the needs of some of the states that say it has to be certified.
So maybe last note, that it doesn't matter how great the system is if it isn't used properly, right? You can always turn it into a doorstop.
Okay. Oh, Barbara, last word.
No, I was just going to say that using your ideas, which I agree with, would also be a chance for outside experts to get involved, because if the requirements were made public, people could review them and suggest that, well, maybe you forgot this thing which should be included or something like that. So that would be another thing I'd like to see.
Boom. End of debate. Great debate. Next debate.
Next debate. Innovation. The next debate is about innovation. We've heard a lot about how concerns about how there's been a slow rate of innovation in the voting system market, about the effect of voting system standardization and certification on innovation. Proposal on the table that a promising way to facilitate innovation in voting systems would be to create some way, some sort of way, to certify new or experimental voting systems for a limited kind of experimental certification, for limited use in live elections, but with a significantly lower bar for approval than full certification. Maybe even waiving certification for this kind of limited use pilot usage. Okay. All right, so we had considerable discussion on this point as well. There was a lot of rough agreement with the goals and the general idea of looking at some alternative to full certification to facilitate innovation. Though I think we might find when we start to look at the details, maybe there's a little less agreement. So Ron Revest is our lead advocate. He's going to give us an opening statement in support of this. 2 minutes.
So I think that we have to recognize that change is happening in the voting industry. We want to see change happening. We want to make systems better. So I like to tell people, you know, voting is not a problem to be solved, but a process to be improved. And we have to think about how we're going to keep taking those steps to improve things. Some of those involve new equipment that needs to go down the path of starting off from an idea to a first prototype, to a trial run, a pilot run here and there, to being field tested, and field tested with live use and so on too. So I think we need to think about the entire life cycle of a voting system from an initial idea all the way to large scale use and the steps along the way. I recently learned about technology readiness level, which those of you in the government are already well familiar with the nine steps you have as a technology makes its way down this path. And so I think we need to see how, you know, imagine what the various stages are and how we're going to support them well. And one of those should be, you know, being able to run small-scale live tests easily on a system that's been through some preliminary testing and evaluation with waived, you know, full certification requirements perhaps, but limits on, you know, maybe being 5,000 voters or whatever the limits are to do this. So we have to imagine what this whole life cycle is going to be like and how maybe a small company could take the steps, get the first few things, get real field testing, and then grow and go through additional testing later on.
Thank you. Okay, Barbara, the argument against, 2 minutes.
Well, I understand where Ron's coming from, and obviously I share many of his feelings about this. I have a couple of concerns. One is, obviously I'd like to see this done with the kinds of systems that we all like, but there are other systems and other vendors who I would not like to see being allowed to run live elections using technologies that I think are fundamentally insecure. So the problem is that this can cut both ways. What I think we should be doing in this kind of situation is what happened in DC, where they ran a pilot which simulated an actual election, but the votes didn't count. Now, admittedly, that's not quite the same thing. It's a step below using real votes and real election, but it certainly worked in DC, and it doesn't have the risks that a real election would have.
Thanks. Okay, so I'm going to ask a question to the supporters, and I hope you'll all answer. Let me test your commitment to this principle that we need, that we're willing to accept a lowered bar to facilitate innovation. Would you be comfortable, would you support, even if reluctantly, a form of pilot certification that did not require software independence?
No.
Okay, Ron?
I'd have to see what the system was, but the answer is probably no. I think, you know, you have to have some initial bars, and software independence is an initial bar that's easy to meet and easy to test for. So I think that, you know, you can imagine that along this path I was describing that meeting software independence would be one of the early hurdles you have to jump over to get to the next stage. I don't see any reason for removing that.
Okay.
And I'll say maybe. you know, I think Barbara's point is well taken, that if a process is put in place, it does need to work the same for everybody, to be fair. You know, so whether you're enamored with the system or not enamored with the system, The process needs to be what it is and be fair across the board.
Can I elaborate on my answer a little bit, though? Sorry to interrupt.
I don't think there's a difference between fairness and having, I mean, we're talking about uniform standards and saying these are properties the system must have in order to get a waiver. Not every system gets a waiver.
We have a diversity of voters and the requirements, too, and having waiving requirements for certain situations may be important, too. So, for example, I think that a reasonable requirement in a jurisdiction would be to say at most 5% of the voters should be able to vote remotely, right? So you might want to field a test run for a remote voting system to meet certain needs with the understanding that this is intended to be a system which is not the system would be used for the average or typical voter, but voters who have to be away from home, say, or something like that, or other kinds of special requirements. So having waivers or facilitated things for limited populations, limited utility, limited numbers of things might be a plausible path forward for some of these systems.
And if I could just amend what I said, if there are enough requirements like strong software independence, a lot of my concerns would tend to go away.
All right, Philip and Ron, I'm going to probe a little more since we had so much support for this. I feel I have to probe a little further. So you're not willing to give up software independence. Let's talk about cryptographic voting systems. One potential argument I didn't quite hear you say, but I could imagine being made for pilot certification, is that it might make it easier to do pilots of end-to-end cryptographic voting systems, open audit, universally verifiable cryptographic voting systems, which this community has studied in great depth. Let's say we're not willing to give up on software independence, and so for pilot certification still requires software independence. Tell me a little about how that's going to work with an end-to-end cryptographic voting system. What would you require for pilot certification that would be sufficient proof that this crazy, complicated, hairy cryptographic system really is software independent? It really does provide end-to-end cryptographic assurance. Would you accept a claim from the manufacturer as sufficient? Would you require extensive in-depth analysis of the mathematical proofs, something in between? How much exactly have we lowered the bar?
So I think there's no reason not to have extensive analysis of the proofs. I mean, I think you need to have a system which is well designed. Cryptography can be subtle. I think, as we've seen, it's easy to have oversights in your design of a cryptographic system. So I would hold cryptographic systems to a high standard and say, if you're going to use these kinds of systems, you need to find a large number of experts or a community of experts who are willing to say, I'm independent and I've looked at this. I've looked at it carefully, and the design is solid. And then beyond that, you need to look at the implementation and see that it's followed through on the implementation. And you've got that the auditing tools that you've got for the proofs that are going to be posted and so on, too, are independently checkable and so on. So I would hold those kinds of systems to a high standard. But I think there should be a way forward for these kinds of systems to see the light of day and to be used in practice once they've jumped over those hurdles.
Yeah, I would just say the difficult point there would be to how much, right? Because obviously time and cost are going to be a barrier to the marketplace, and so that would just have to be determined at some level.
So let me repeat what I'm hearing. I think what I'm hearing is support for pilot or experimental certification, but I think I'm hearing from some folks in this panel still require software independence and still require for cryptographic voting systems extensive mathematical analysis. That sounds like not really actually lowering the bar very much on the security side. So tell me about the most painful concession you would be
to lowering the bar. Maybe it's widening the door or something. I don't know.
Tell me about the most painful concession you would make to lower the bar for the property or the requirement that you cherish the most, that you think should be required for full certification, that you would be reluctantly, painfully, but willing to give up for a pilot certification. Is the question clear? In other words, of all the things that you would not require for a pilot certification, would be required for full certification, but you would say, I'm willing to not require that for a pilot certification, of all the ones, what is the most significant concession you'd be willing to make?
There are things that you're sort of forced to. I mean, having voter verifiability of paper ballots for blind voters, for example, is tough, right? And so having an exemption or a process for handling the needs of blind voters, I'm willing to personally to think about lots of approaches for handling communities of voters who have disabilities or have needs that are different, and trying to understand how best to design a system for them. And software independence for those voters might be one of the things I would be willing to bend on. But I would not want to use that as the camel's nose under the door to say, this kind of system isn't good for all voters.
So I think if you're really pushing on me, the fact is that I think the reason that I'm willing to live with limited certification or no certification for on an experimental basis is because I'm willing to give up exactly those same things in full certification. So the minimal set for me is kind of the same in both cases. And while if you propose some E2E system to me, my first step would be to call Ron and Josh and Olivia and other people who are in this room and say, what do you think? The fact is I'd be very squeamish about giving away paper, period, no matter how good the proofs appear to be.
I think it might be possible to give up some things, like depending if you are aiming the system at a particular subgroup, as Ron said. You talked about voters with disabilities. You could take a different kind of subgroup, maybe where there are no voters with disabilities, and then you could give up some of the accessibility requirements that we would normally have in a voting system. I mean, voting systems have broad range of requirements, and if a particular system is aimed at a subgroup for which some of the requirements aren't required, we might be able to give those up. But again, with full certification, what Philip was saying, that could also apply if the system was aimed only at a subgroup, a very well-defined subgroup.
Yeah, I can't necessarily say I'd give up usability or accessibility fully. Certainly the one thing, and so from a process standpoint particularly, what might in a limited pilot give up is to move, at least for that, towards some sort of manufactured declaration of conformance, at least in particular areas, right? It just makes sense in this instance, not in most instances for me, but in this instance it might.
Yeah, and I wasn't saying giving up usability. I think that's critical.
So you have manufacturer's declaration of performance. Do you then have penalties for nonconformance?
Of conformance, to whatever your particular requirement is.
But so suppose it turns out that it doesn't do what they claim it does.
Yeah,
then,
of course
you,
there would have
you slap
to be
them
a,
somehow.
Yeah. What is that reliability? I mean, since we're only talking about one election a short period of time, I think reliability as we currently think of it probably would be something we could stand to have a little less rigor in as well.
Let me probe Barbara, and then I'm going to open things up for a little bit of audience. So Barbara, I just was picking on all the supporters, so now I'm going to pick on you a little bit.
Good, thank you, David. I was feeling ignored.
Do you agree that we need to do more to facilitate innovation in voting systems? And if you do, and if you don't think this is the right way to do it, do you have any other proposals about what you think would be the best way to facilitate innovation? If not this, what?
How could I disagree for this group of people? How to facilitate innovation with... Well, as I said earlier, I would support pilots, which, as much as possible, simulate the real election without taking the risk. So that's one way of doing it.
Okay. Show of hands from the audience or people who'd like to ask questions. So, David, and looks like there's two of you. Is there anyone else who wanted to ask? All right. We got three questions.
So a lower bar for approval can mean two things. It can mean either you have not as much demonstrated compliance with the standard, or it can mean that you have demonstrated non-compliance with the standard. Let's suppose you have a wildly successful pilot of a system that is demonstrated to be non-compliant with the standard. What happens next?
Okay. I was just wondering, maybe you could lower the requirements on security of the system if you actually count the ballot printed on paper. Like, you could run the system, but with no security at all in terms of the crypto, for example, in the sense that you would always export paper. Like, you would have a trapdoor which runs an actual paper-based thing, and then you would test the other properties, the all the other stuff. That might be a reasonable way.
The fact that you're talking about trials and pilots suggests that there are times when you need to test some things in the field that you can't test in the lab. Maybe it's helpful to think about what things are right to test in the field and what things aren't. I would suggest that the reason that you don't take lower security requirements for your pilot is because security isn't something you should be testing in the field. That's something that you need to get right in the lab and be sure about first. There may be other things like user acceptance or throughput, some performance metrics that you can't test other than in a live election. But surely you don't lower the security requirements simply because that's not the right place to be testing security.
Okay, let's go down the line for any reactions.
Okay.
I would just say that initially we have to go back and look at the question, I think, and why are we talking about pilots? It's to get at innovation, right? To get more innovation in this field. And maybe there are better ways to get innovation in this field. I mean, one of the things that we've been at least discussing and perhaps moving forward with common data format stuff is looking towards, component testing, as long as, we get the common data format work done. And that perhaps could allow innovation in specific areas. If a company or an individual is very good at doing one thing, let's bring them in and see if they can meet requirements for that one lot.
Wanted to respond to James' question. First of all, there may be, with respect to security, there may be things, new things that the voter has to do that affect the security system, as with Scantegrity or Preda Vote or the others that you're familiar with. The voters asked to do new things that they may not understand or may do poorly in practice or something. So you need to try to understand how this new role that the voter has is participating, not only expressing their choices somehow on the ballot, but also keeping a receipt or marking things in some other different way is going to affect, is going to turn out in practice. And maybe that there's some gotchas there that need to be found out, and you only find them out with a pilot study somehow. So security is part of the, I think, some of these systems, having a security aspect to the pilot is important.
Well, I was going to make the same point, but since, let me attempt the first question, which I actually found the most challenging, which is, what if you run a pilot, you find problems with it, but people really love it. What do you do? And I think that's something which we're encountering already with internet voting, where we get all these people claiming how wonderful it is and it really works well. And or even remote voting, we're getting it with, where everybody loves vote by mail, but we know it's insecure. So I'm not sure that I have a good answer for that, because this seems to be a fundamental issue that we are confronting in many areas. I think that doesn't mean we shouldn't do pilots. I think we should do pilots because they're safer than real elections. But we need to be prepared for this kind of reaction. And I think that there have to be a lot of caveats beforehand. And we need to know how to handle the PR, by the way. That's going to be part of it.
I keep coming back to the devious way that David pushed us earlier. those things that I think I'd be willing to give up in a trial are pretty much the same things I'd be willing to give up in certification. And so this idea of crypto plus paper, I quite like crypto plus paper. And if the crypto is broken, provided the paper is accurate and you've curated it well and you can verify that you've curated it well and you conduct an audit of the paper, then it's a belt and suspenders solution to this problem, and I think it makes a lot of sense. But I'd be willing to give that up in certification under exactly the same circumstances. So I don't know that I really feel very differently. I guess my fundamental feeling is certification is just off mark right now, that the focus is in the wrong place, and in particular just not enough focus on procedures.
Thank you. Good debate.
Oh, wait, last word? You want a last word? Quick? Let's move on. Next debate, lightning debate, so it's gotta be quick. All right, and by the way, before I move on to the next topic, I just wanna say a public thank you to Joe Hall, who I don't think is here, but was tremendously helpful in helping me craft some of these debates. So if you're having fun, go thank Joe when you see him. All right, next and last debate, sad to say, last one. All right, so here's the statement on the table that it might help improve election security or privacy or integrity if we allowed white hat attackers to try to hack our voting systems during live public elections. In other words, give the good guys, give them a way to test the system under situations that's guaranteed to be realistic. All right.
What could possibly
common ground.
Whoa!
I think the reaction from all of our panelists ranged from no way to that's kind of scary. Maybe I'm kind of scared of it. Okay, so a lot of concerns. This is obviously a very tricky topic. I twisted Barbara's arms to please try to present the positive argument as best as possible. I think everyone agreed it's not a good idea to allow black hat attackers.
White hat.
Not a good idea to allow black hat attackers. We're talking about allowing white hat attackers.
I'm sorry, they asked for permission?
Yeah. And even with white hat attackers, there are significant risks. But maybe Barbara can help articulate some of the potential benefits. 2 minutes.
Well, the best argument I can think of, actually, is if we threaten to do this, it might bring about better pilots and testing, so we wouldn't... So we wouldn't go to market with systems which aren't ready yet. The very idea that somebody might be able to break into a system which is actually being used might put the fear of God into some people who would not be so eager to go with the newest, greatest, and best system because what if they get broken into?
Alex is out there. Cause
yeah, exactly, because we've got some good people here. So I think that's actually the best argument for doing it as a way to force people to do the right thing.
Thank you. Brian, you agreed to articulate the argument against?
Sure. There are lots of fairly obvious, I think, and probably most of us sent your email that you received from us articulated those. But certainly the public perception idea is huge, right? I mean, there's enough of a concern by a large portion of the public right now. You know, we've been talking about it the past several days. While it may actually end up with some good results, I think some unintended consequences need to be very, very carefully looked at. The legality of the whole thing. You know, I would shudder to think what some of the states and locals would do, and the letters that folks would get from attorney generals and such. So the public perception and the legality are my two big points.
Okay. So some questions for the opponents. Ron and
actually,
Brian.
Before I get labeled as an opponent, can I give a couple of arguments in support of Barbara's position?
Please do.
You said we don't have to. You know,
it's not my position. It's
you drafted. Well,
there was some arm twisting.
So the two arguments in favor of this, I'm not going to say this is my final bottom line, of course, but the two arguments in favor of this is that during live elections, you have equipment set up and a system set up in a way that it's really hard to arrange at other times of the year. I mean, you've got a full scale, all of the personnel that are going to be working the system are only there for that kind of election. So if you're doing social engineering as part of your attack or other things, you've got a framework and also the electronic infrastructure set up is a unique kind of situation. It's hard to replicate that in other kinds of situations. So that's one argument that you might argue in favor of doing live attacks. The second is that if you're going to explicitly endorse a white hat set of attacks, it depends on what the rules of the game are, but just like with open-ended vulnerability testing, in order to make it really as give the satisfying results you may want, you really have to give the white-hat attackers the documentation, the internal, the source code, the other things that they should, that you expect the black hat attackers to have anyway. So it puts a burden on the manufacturers to supply this, organize and supply this documentation in a way that in fact they haven't been doing yet, and would make that available for this. So it sort of puts an extra hygiene requirement on them that I think would be nice.
I actually had another argument that I thought
of. So another pro argument is that I'm sure everybody in this room has been challenged with the statement, well, but do you know of any systems that were actually broken into? And at this point, you know, we can talk about DC, but that was a pilot. So if we could say, well, yes, actually, people were voting this election and the White Hats got in, then we'd have an answer.
So let me raise a question for those of you who have concerns, which are understandable. I think I've talked to many folks in the security field, worked on voting for maybe the past decade, and a story I've heard consistently has been a kind of frustration with some of the claims that sometimes get made about some of the voting systems being unhackable or perfect or absolutely great, when computer scientists have tried to say, well, on first principles that seems unlikely, that leads to an unproductive debate because it's not grounded in specific facts that are verifiable about particular machines. And I think many computer scientists have, in the mid-2000s, felt a certain frustration that they were not provided access to the voting machines, and if only they had the access, they could demonstrate, they could provide evidence for their point of view. And in fact, when we saw some of the early papers on voting DRE security, for instance, I think many of those kind of fell into this camp of facts that I thought I already knew that I could prove once I had access. And without access, the debate is just all heat and no light. Or if you look at the DC experience, I think you could find there be another example of computer scientists arguing something from first principles. But everyone who knows security testing knows that it's one thing to say this is a bad practice and you're vulnerable, and it's another thing to be able to demonstrate the exploit, to be able to show the working click, boom, here's what happens. And that creates a visceral emotional reaction that solidifies in a way that speaking in a purely theoretical first principles way may not apply. So I guess the question I would have for those of you who are concerned would be, if attacking in live elections is not the right way to do this, do you have any thoughts about other ways to avoid this kind of conundrum?
Despite the fact that I refuse to take a position, I'm going to try to take some kind of position. So I think there's a very big difference between having somebody come and check to make sure you lock the front door and inviting them to rummage around in your dressers, right? It's somehow, you know, making sure the door's locked is a good thing to do. I don't really want somebody rummaging around in my dresser.
How would that play out in the voting world?
Well, you want to see whether there is a security vulnerability, whether somebody can get in. But if they get in, you don't want them doing damage, right? Now, whether people are capable of walking that line is another story. I don't know whether you can accidentally do damage of a kind that's irretrievable. And again, if you at the end of the day have voter mark paper to go refer to, and you look at it,
I think that trying to, you know, if you're really trying to go whole hog and explore the possible attacks on a system with a white attack, it's really tough to be sure that there's not going to be unintended consequences or that the system isn't going to go awry somehow. You know, somebody convinces somebody that they're the right policeman to carry the PEBs over somewhere else and walks away with them and then whatever. You know, so I mean, I think that. Just as verifying a security system, the security of a system is really hard. Verifying that a white hat attack isn't going to go awry somehow is probably even harder, and I think we should stay away from that. So the question is, what do we do instead? And I think we get as close to that as we can. We run trial, fake elections, or we set us up as near to the environment as we can, and we make do. It won't be as good in terms of finding out, but again, you don't want the risks of trying to find out on what happens on a real election.
Right, and I would agree with Ron. You know, the way we go is something we've just talked about is, better, more rigorous open-ended vulnerability or penetration testing to get as close to that point, as you can. And I think you brought up an interesting point that hadn't been discussed before about sort of the issues for lack of a better word, that sort of came up initially and to some degree still exists between election officials and the computer science security community. I personally think that's we've come a long way since 2000, 2002, 2004. I mean, just the fact that folks like myself and others are here at this meeting, the fact that you all come to election meetings, you know, that's a big step in the right direction. I think the key is to keep cooperating and find where we can get the most common ground.
Audience? Woo! Why don't you line up in the mic? There's a lot.
Jump in.
Yeah, please.
All right. The whole list of questions before our panel.
So, at least for online elections, it's not clear to me how white hats could do a good job. Except for penetration testing, you can't even allow white hats to do denial of service attacks, to circulate malware, to attack routers, to attack DNS, because that does damage to everybody else unrelated to the election. So is there even a way to specify what a white hat testing could be in a live election?
Peter?
Right. Let me amplify on that. There are several issues that have to be determined whether they're in scope. Denial of service is one. Another one is social engineering, because there's a lot of problems there. But I think the first question is, can you run two elections in parallel where every voter is encouraged to duplicate their vote in the other system, which is then fair game for attacks without some of the liabilities? The second issue there is, how do we know that they actually succeeded in changing the vote in some way, which is an interesting question, especially if the audit trails aren't adequate. And the third has to do with whether we can detect whether they actually did achieve what they claim they have done. So I think there are lots and lots of opportunities, but if you can do the do-over, it might resolve it. But I think that's a bad idea, and I think you really want to do two in parallel, the real election and the pilot studies in parallel.
Alex?
Well, I think this is a really great question, and I'm glad to get to hear everyone's opinions on it. From my own experience, the reason that I wouldn't want to participate in an attempt to do security tests during a live election is exactly the reason that Phil and Ron just commented on, that the risk of causing unintended damage to the real election, of losing votes, of accidentally shutting down the system somehow, that's something that I just don't think would be possible to avoid to a high enough level of certainty. That said, realistic testing in a mock election scenario, I think, is something that we ought to do much more of. It would also have the further effect, by getting election officials to run a mock election and worry about security problems during that, be a great kind of dry run and practice scenario for the problems that ought to be getting debugged before election day. So I'd wholeheartedly advocate that.
Justin?
So this isn't so much a question, it is kind of a counterproposal, and that is that every time that we would like to pilot a new system and we would like to test the security and like to do one of these, you know, kind of open it all to the white hackers, the idea being that there should be one question on the ballot, and that is, has this election been hacked? And the election officials can hand out credentials to as many people as they want and say, just go vote no. And then at the end, you add up all the votes and, you know, see what the answer comes out as.
How many times have you voted this question?
So just yesterday, we had a demo of some white hat hackers infringing a live system. It wasn't a voting machine. But it has a key bearing on something I've been thinking about since the debate began, and that is, how does our current certification scheme deal with what I'll reluctantly name important peripherals? The systems which, in some readings of HAVA, might be part of a voting system, but which some say are not, but systems that have a bearing on a voter's ability to cast an effective ballot. And they may be used in the polling place, they may not, they may be virtual, they may be local, but these are things we don't have any standards for. How does our current certification scheme deal with that, and should it?
All right, brief last words from each of the panelists, starting with Philip, who is about to miss his plane.
I don't know what to say. I mean, I if It seems like, on balance, the risk of doing inadvertent damage, the fact that there are so many kinds of attacks which you couldn't even mount because of the risk of doing inadvertent damage to the election seem overwhelming. By the same token, if you've got voter mark paper and you know you kept track of it and you look at it, you can recover from some of those problems.
Barbara?
I agree. You know, I just want to point out, I was drafted to defend this position.
Point noted.
Rod?
I don't think I have anything to add to what I've said already.
Brian?
No, just to answer, you know, Pam's question, obviously that a lot of peripherals aren't covered by the certification, so there is no check on those.
But there should be.
Should they be? That's
the question again. Yeah. What's the point of certification?
Right.
Is it advisory for a buy decision for somebody?
Guarantee of fitness for use.
Voter registration systems often are homebrew and they're not bought or something. So maybe two or something.
All right, we're out of time. Great discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Thanks.